from the legendary Music Row in Nashville, Tennessee, Larrivee Guitars presents two guys fumbling their way through the music business so you don't have to. Here they are. It's Scott and it's Hino and the Music Row Show.
Hello, friends, and welcome to the Music Row Show, brought to you by Larrivee Guitars. My name is Scott.
And my name is Hino. I actually have my voice tonight. Thank you so much for tuning in tonight. And as you know by now, this show is for you songwriters and performers and musicians out there who are just trying to figure things out here in Music City.
That's right. Now, we don't have any answers. You know, I was just thinking, Hino.
What were you thinking?
People say that you and I end up sounding alike.
Not tonight.
Tonight, nobody's going to have any question knowing who's talking.
That's true.
No, we don't know anything. We're out slinging songs during the day just like you guys are. We are able to find the right people, bring them into the studio, pick their brains, and answer your questions.
That's right. And you can do that by calling 800-688-9522. Or you can always email us at mail@themusicrowshow.com. And if that weren't enough choices, you can find us on Facebook at Facebook.com/TheMusicRowShow. And we'll start a conversation there right now. And you can just chime in any old time you like. Now, we got a big show tonight. We've got, first up this hour, we're going to be sharing a conversation with the one and only Dolly Parton. The next hour, we're going to be visiting with songwriting guru and professor at the Berklee School of Music, Pat Pattison.
Very nice. Very, very nice. Maybe we can get some sort of college credit out of this this evening.
Oh, that would be good.
Yeah.
That would be good. My college days are behind me, but you know what? It'd be good.
My college days, I don't know if they really ever happened. I know I was there.
Do you remember it?
I remember paying the bills.
Yeah, I remember that too. Yeah, good times.
So, hey, you know what? Yesterday, a buddy of mine from Eugene, Oregon, Facebooked me and said he wanted to start playing the guitar and if I had any suggestions. So, of course, since we're sponsored by Larrivee.
Of course.
I brought up the Larrivees and he was looking for kind of a beginning level type of guitar. And I told him basically that check out the O3 series because not only are they economical, but the thing is like your other major brand guitars, any of their economical, level of guitars are not, they're not made there at the regular plant. They're farmed out to China or Mexico or something like that. So, Larrivee actually makes all of their guitars in the same place. Their O3 series, which is their least expensive.
Yeah, you don't really want to call it an entry level.
Because, it isn't.
I mean, they're.
Because it's made with the exact same craftsmanship, the exact same wood, the dovetailed necks, just everything is made the exact same way. The only difference is they don't have the.
Yeah, it has less bling and it has.
Doesn't have the shiny finish.
Yeah. A couple of things that make it a little bit less expensive, but it's still a great quality guitar.
Well, and it's like I told him, I said, you know, we see these in studios all over town.
Yeah.
Because they want that sound. You know, and we've talked about it before. Some guitars are real bassy and boomy. And
right. And anything that makes the engineer have to take a whole bunch of time to, you know, get something dialed in, they don't like that. If they can just put a mic in front of a guitar and it sounds great without them having to do a bunch of work, they love that. They're
absolutely
all over it.
And that's what Larrivee offers. So that's, you know, I was proud to steer him in that direction and I'm anxious to see what his decision is. So Dwayne, you keep me posted on that because I want to hear what you decide and I want to see what you end up picking up.
Absolutely. Well, that's why we always keep saying that the next time you're looking for a new guitar, you got to make sure to try out some Larrivees. You know, and while you're comparing, just listen to the difference. Go to their website, larrivee.com, and find a dealer near you and you know, chances are you'll love them just like we do.
That's right. Well, Hino's got to go push a couple of buttons here. But, you know, I'll actually say a little bit about the fact that Dolly Parton has this new CD-DVD set out on only available at Cracker Barrel. And I was pretty sick this week. And so I actually spent some time just laying in bed, which is unusual. And so I threw the DVD in. And it was so good. the thing that amazes me, and I don't know if we really talk about it. We didn't talk about it with her because that would have been just all fawning over.
But yeah, yeah.
Her voice is just so strong.
It really is.
And so good and so pure after all these years in the business.
Yeah, a lot of singers, you know, as they get older,
they wane.
Yeah, you know, they start not to sound as good as they once did. But there's a few singers who just, and she's one of them, they just sound as good as they ever
did. I mean,
did.
We're talking huge stadiums doing an a cappella number, and it's just, it's like a bell.
Yeah.
Pretty amazing. But anyway, Hino, why don't you let our listeners know what they have in store for
them. Well, you know, as Scott was just mentioning, you know, we got a chance to sit down with the one and only Dolly Parton, which, of course, in and of itself is just a huge honor.
Huge.
I mean, when you think of the amazing accomplishments that she's had during her career, she's written, I think, over 5,000 songs, she mentioned. She's had over 20 number ones. She's had songs in movies, TV shows, plays, had her own TV show, not to mention her theme parks.
And she's a movie star.
A movie star. Countless philanthropic things like her Books from Birth program, which is really cool. Not to mention that she's in the Country Music Hall of Fame, the Songwriters Hall of Fame, the Grand Ole Opry, of course. It was just great. We were just delighted to be able to chat with her on the eve of her latest release, which is a CD DVD combination called An Evening with Dolly that's available at Cracker Barrel. So if you've got a Cracker Barrel nearby, you can go find that. And we just had a great time, so we're just going to go ahead and let her rip.
Dolly, congratulations on this Cracker Barrel DVD and CD set. It's fantastic. I've really enjoyed listening to and watching it. Now, the DVD was filmed in London. What do you remember feeling and experiencing the first time you ever traveled abroad as a performer?
Well, that's a good question. I think the first time I ever went overseas, I think it's when they had the Wembley Festival they used to have as a big country music thing. And that's when I was still, I think I was with Porter. Porter didn't like to fly, so he wouldn't go. I remember going over to the festival several times through the years, and I was amazed at the fans, how much they love country music. And they'd never seen me, and I think most of them was real surprised at hearing my voice and then seeing me all dressed all gaudy. And, you know, I didn't look the part hardly. But they come to accept me, and that was actually, I started building that fan base overseas with Coat of Many Colors. But through the years, they just kind of claimed me because I told all those sad stories that a lot of them relate to, and a lot of poor people in Europe, especially Scotland and Ireland and England. So they related to songs like Coat of Many Colors, and they just kind of claimed me, and they've just been very supportive, and they just treat me like family. So it's very exciting. I mean, of course, the audiences are great here, but the difference is people here know that they can see you if you're going to be anywhere in the States. Right. But they know I don't come that often. So when you go, they really want to show you they're glad you're there, and they want to make sure you come back. So they're really responsive. So I'm sure if you saw the DVD, the Live from London stuff that we did when we were on tour a few years back, which is what this is, then you can see that they're excited. So, but anyway, I felt good. Good to be loved in foreign places.
All right, now one of our listeners asked this question. Given the huge amount of hits that you have on this new DVD and CD set, it's very applicable. Which one of your songs are you most proud of that was maybe also the most difficult to write?
Difficult to write. Well, some of them are harder to write than others, or take a little longer, especially if it's more involved, because you've got to tell a whole story and you've got to put it in a very short place, and you still got to have a melody to it. So people don't really realize when you're telling stories what all you really have to work with. But my favorite song that I have written, and probably falls in that category, is Coat of Many Colors, because I was telling a story. So you got to make sure you cover all the things you want to, but you've still got to keep it within a radio play in time, 3 minutes or so. And then you got to tell a whole life story in 3 minutes with a tune and get all your heart and soul and talk about mama and all that. So I remember taking time to think about, you know, that song just came to me. I didn't realize that pain had kind of lingered in there. And I guess it was meant for me to write it, not just for me, but that song has helped so many people, saying, you know, that's been made fun of or bullied, as everything's talking about now. I think it has really helped a lot of people. But that one is my favorite of all the songs I've written, because it's more than a song. It's an attitude, and talks about family and the fact that you don't have to have money to be rich. You can be rich in spirit and in faith and in just whatever the good qualities you're supposed to have that money don't buy anyway. So that would probably be the one.
Given the number of songs that you've written, how on earth did you go about choosing the songs for this album?
Well, you always have that trouble when you're going to go on tour. Well, I've done that year in and year out, and because you're going to play to a lot of the same people. But you know you have to always do your hits. And, of course, there's a lot of them we didn't do, but the ones, the main ones, like the I Will Always Love You, Jolene, Cold Minute Colors, Islands, they're just some you know you have to do. But I try to... because there's some songs that are famous that were not hits, like Applejack, that people like to hear playing the banjo. And so you try to base it on how you entertain the crowd and what your dynamics to where you kind of want to go up and down. And my favorite part of the show is like the family segment, the Tennessee Mountain Home segment, and trying to choose what to do. So it's not an easy job. You just try to figure out what you think they'll enjoy most, what you can entertain them with the most, what your best stories would be about this song or how that song came to be. But you have to leave out so much stuff, it just breaks your heart. And in fact, people say, why didn't you do so-and-so? Why didn't you? Somebody else will say, you didn't do my favorite. But it's really hard. It's just a decision you have to make. But I think this album has something for everybody. And all the hits with stories about them. People like to hear me talk, and I never know when to hush. And but they like to hear the stories about it. And so I think the 11 songs plus the two bonus tracks, I think, is a good showing. Plus, what was great about our DVD on this, we did a lot of behind the scenes. People like that too. They like to see how the show was put together, what it's like backstage, and we traveled around with our crew in different places where we went when we traveled to Europe, for instance, and seeing all the places of interest. So we got something for everybody on this. They can travel. They can get to go on a trip without having to pay anything more than the DVD and CD price.
Going overseas is always a pretty cool thing. I'm just curious, what do you look forward to about going overseas, and what kind of landmarks and things have impressed you along the way in your travels?
Well, everything about Europe, because when you go, I really look at that more like a vacation, because you don't get to travel that much, and it's wonderful to be able to travel in a group, because you got your road managers and people taking care of everything, making sure you get to the airport, making sure they got your luggage, as opposed to when you try to go on vacation on your own. It's such a pain, you wish you hadn't have gone. You know what I mean? It's like so much work to do. So we have to plan it, because you don't just up and say, let's go to Europe for a few weeks. You know, we were there, I think, five weeks on our whole trip. So we looked at all the places we might want to go and all the points of interest in every place, like all the churches in Scotland and Ireland and all the, you know, just the scenery going out in the country. And in England, my Lord, all of that stuff is so impressive. Every time we go, I go on a tour because I've got somebody new in the band, somebody that hasn't seen it, and I like to see their reaction too. And I always enjoy it, and we always buy the souvenirs and act like real tourists. So it's really like a paid vacation.
Going back to your concert DVD, one of the things that strikes me is just what command you have of the stage and the audience, and the confidence that you exude. And I know that that can be pretty difficult for some recording artists, especially when they're starting out. How did you go about developing that confidence that you have now? I mean, was it always there?
Well, no, you never always have the confidence that you hopefully build through the year. You're always growing. I get those butterflies. People say, do you get nervous? I don't get scared, but I do kind of get a little nervous sometimes. I guess that you can't just know what's going to happen. Anything can happen when you go on stage. So I stand back there and my heart beats fast and I'm, you know, pacing. But just the second I walk on stage and the light hits me, then you get over that. You don't think about it. You can't think about it then because you're on. It's up to you then. But I remember when the first time I ever went on stage, my Uncle Bill Owens, who was my mother's brother, that was so very helpful to me, used to take me around, had so much confidence in me and thought I was going to be a star. And he played guitar. And we used to write a lot together. So he used to take me around to all these places. And the first time I sang in front of an audience was on the Kaz Walker Show in Knoxville. It was a radio show, but it was done in a little theater, so there was people there. And I went out, and I had a song to sing. So I went out to sing, and I mean, I just tore the house down, and I didn't have another song, so I kept singing that same song over and over. And so when we was walking through the parking lot, I said to my uncle, and I was 10, I said, well, they liked me, didn't they? And I said, I guess I'm going to be a star. And he said, well, I guess you are. But it was only years later that I realized I wasn't that good. I was just that. It was because I was little, not because I was good. And so I think that that built my confidence, though, because I got that great response. So then I thought I was special, and that gave me confidence to think that they liked me. So I just kind of fell in love with the crowd, and I always tried to remember that and still do.
All right, we're going to be back with much more with Dolly Parton here on the Music Row Show. Stick around.
Jolene, well, let's sing about her again.
Jolene, 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 I'm begging of you, please, don't take my man.
All right, welcome back to the Music Row Show, brought to you by Larravee Guitars. And that is a song called Jolene, which was a big hit for Dolly Parton, our guest this hour, and that's off of her latest CD and DVD, An Evening with Dolly Parton, only available at Cracker Barrel. Now, I'm just curious, as a writer, is it easier or harder for you to write for an assignment versus, you know, just writing whenever the inspiration hits you? And is there, you know, is writer's block ever become an issue in all of that?
Well, I think sometimes, to answer the last part of that, I think the bigger challenges sometimes for me as a writer is when I've been commissioned to do something rather than it just coming out of me when I'm just in a writing mood or want to write. For instance, like when I did the 9 to 5 musical, and I had other people having to direct me of what they needed, having to go back and change it, having to just write a completely different song because they changed the script that week, and trying to just keep your head wrapped around that. Those are the difficult ones where other people get involved in my writing. Usually it's just between me and God, or God and me, or God and I. Anyway, Him first is what I'm trying to say. Anyway, so it's usually just, that's just my sacred precious time, and so I like to just do it at my own leisure. But I really just love to write, and I to answer that writer's block, I've never, the only blocks I've ever had with writing, I hear a lot of writers say that, the only blocks I've ever had is when so much stuff got in my way that I can't get a chance to go do it. I've never had a time that I thought, oh, I can't write, I can't think of nothing. Because as soon as I pick up a guitar or an instrument or hit a chord on a piano, if I'm just walking through the house and I hit a chord, just natural for me, if there's a guitar and sitting up on a stand, I'll rake my hand across it. It's just a natural thing, and then I'll just hear something else. I'll hear, want to write. So I've never had a period of time where I thought I couldn't write, because I think of something every day. It's just that I don't always get the time to spend. Because time gets, you know, it gets kind of rough when you got as many irons in the fire as I do. Sometimes some of them's going to burn your butt, and you're going to have to kind of find the time to do the things you really want to do. What happened to your arm?
Well, I tell you, I was listening to my Backwoods Barbie CD, and I pulled my arm back as I was dancing. Now, one of the bonus tracks on this CD is Shattered Image, which is a beautiful song and really a timely message in this age of paparazzi and media overexposure. What inspired the writing of this song?
Well, that's the funniest thing. Goes to show you how it's always just the same. All the gossip people have always done it. I wrote that song back when I was working with Porter, when all the rumors were going around and all the people I'm supposed to have slept with, everybody I ever worked with. And even if I did, I wouldn't tell it. But still, you know, it's like one of those things that it was just kill. Because I had never been, you know, I just loved everybody and wanted everybody to love me. And I'm so tenderhearted and sensitive. And then when they started saying really bad things about me, man, it just absolutely crushed me. I was just so embarrassed and so hurt and so felt like, how do I defend myself? How do I let people know this? How do I let people know that? So I wrote that song even back then, and that was probably in the late 60s, early 70s, when I wrote that song, when they first started saying bad things about me in the tabloids or in the press and different, you know, just rumors going around. Because even when they're true, it hurts. you know, when people talk bad about you. You know, sure. It's like they still don't know the whole truth and nothing but the truth, because there's always different truths to every story, you know. But it's like they were saying different, all kinds of different things. And I just thought, wow, shattered image. And so I just started writing that song, you know.
It's a great song.
Thank you. That was these bonus tracks. Of course, those are songs that I have recorded before, and Tennessee Mountain Home is a bonus track as well. But they were songs that we did when we were on tour. But you have to edit down when we did the show to have, you can only have a certain amount of things. And I thought, well, what songs didn't we do when we were on tour? Different times that I've done these songs, I don't always do the same ones every night. So I thought, well, we'll just call these bonus tracks so they Cracker Barrel can have something different than what the, you know, other CD and everything was, the Live from London stuff.
Now, a lot of people don't know this, but your older sister, Willa Dean, is a published poet herself. I'm just curious, have you ever co-written with her or any of your other siblings for any of your projects over the years?
Well, yes, I do. My sister, Willa Dean, is my oldest sister. Like, she's the oldest one in the family, so she's kind of like a mother figure to us also. She's not that much older than me. She's only 6 years older than me. I have a sister and two brothers older, and then there's 8 kids younger. But my sister, we all write. We're all very creative. We get that from my mother's side of the family. And Willa Dean also is a good singer. She won't go out and do it on her own, but she was one of those that had that, one of the pretty harmony voices when the sisters used to sing. All my sisters used to travel around, sing at different churches, funerals and weddings, and they'd ask us to come sing. But Willa Dean is a poet, and I have written songs probably with every brother and sister I have, you know, different things here and there. I really write great with my brother Floyd, the one that wrote Rockin' Years, that Ricky Van Shelton and myself had the BMI Song of the Year that year or whatever. I don't know if he was BMI or ASCAP. But anyway, it was the Song of the Year. I write really good with them.
Looking back to when you first started in this industry and then translating that to the world of today, you know, the access that the general public has with the with celebrities these days, with Twitter and Facebook, it's almost overwhelming. You've always kept a certain mystique about you. I'm curious on your thoughts on the state of so much accessibility of celebrities and the lack of mystery that exists with today's stars.
Well, I really do think there's a plus and a minus in everything. But it just shocks me and frightens me that how everything is so out there now. But I have always managed to live my life so private. People hardly know what I'm doing unless I put it out there to tell them. And that's why I don't text, I don't email, because I don't want everybody, you know, I just make my calls out. And if somebody wants to call me, they just call me. But I surround myself with people on the, you know, we have to stay up with the times with the Twitter and the Facebook and all that. I tell them what I want them to know, tell them what they want to know, but I'm not going to tell them. Like I say, you can know most things about me, but nobody's ever going to know everything because it just bothers me to see all these people. You can't even go to a restaurant. You don't even know if they're bugged. You don't know if there's a camera there. It's like, oh my God, you just have to be so... You know, so in a way, I think that really, it's not just the stars, it's just people, anybody. You know, it's just like there's nothing sacred, nothing secret, nothing private, nothing, you know, it's just bizarre to me. So anyway, I've managed okay with it. I've done all right so far. I still try to keep my private place private, my life with my husband, with my family. I never advertise where I'm going to be unless it's something like this where you know what it is. And I just live such a simple life, really, behind the scenes, that you don't know where I am. And you couldn't find me if you tried.
Well, I'm just curious, only, you know, mainly because it's never happened to me before. But as a songwriter, how does it feel when somebody else cuts your song? I mean, obviously, Whitney Houston had a huge hit with I Will Always Love You. But I just heard that the Oak Ridge Boys just cut Coat of Many Colors.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, with Joe Bonsall doing lead. Isn't that amazing?
Oh, well, different people have recorded it. Yeah. Shania did it, and a couple of people, and Emmylou, I think, did it one time.
Yeah, so I was going to ask, if you had a favorite cut that somebody had done over the years, and how it felt to hear somebody else doing your song.
Well, it feels great because I think every songwriter, you don't expect them to sing it like you. I've heard other people say, "Ooh, I hated her version of that or his version of your song." I said, "Well, that was my version." You know, I love the way that people interpret my songs. I love it. They did that tribute album a few years back, all those girls, and I was surprised at all the different ways that they did my songs. I think probably one of my favorite things, well, outside of the Whitney, that'll always be, like, great. But Emmylou did a song of mine called To Daddy. She had a number one song, and a lot of people don't even know I wrote that song because there's a story about it. But I always thought that was such a great record that she did. I had written that song, and one of the biggest fights that Porter and I ever had, he had produced that on me. We had, and this goes to show you now how songwriters are. And so we had recorded it, and he thought that we should put it out as a single on me. Well, Emmylou, being a friend, and she was down at the studio, and we were recording, and Porter was, we were playing the stuff, and she turned to me and she said, "Dolly, I have to have that song." And Porter said, "Well, you can't have that song because we're going to put that out with Dolly." I said, "She can't have that song." And he said, "She can't have that song." And then he said, "Well, I don't mean to start no trouble, but I would really love to have that song because you can write another some more." So anyway, I fought Porter over it, and I guess you know who won. So Emmylou had number one record. He never did forgive me when it came number one because he had produced the one on me. Of course, they basically did basically how we had done it too. But anyway, so I was always really proud of that, and it had a story to go along with it. So as a songwriter, you give up stuff. I gave up a hit record as a singer to have a song that I had written by a major artist at that time.
There's another song from this album I would like to focus on, especially in the wake of Whitney Houston's passing. Can you talk us through the amazing history you have with "I Will Always Love You"?
"I Will Always Love You" is just another one of those songs like 9 to 5. It just keeps going and going. But that is probably, I'll probably be remembered more for that than anything. But as most of you know that have followed my career, you know, I wrote that about my leaving the Porter Wagoner Show, Porter being the guy that had really helped me the most in my early days. He had the syndicated show. And I had, when I started with him, I'd already had like 3 chart records. And I said, you know, I'd stay for 5 years, but I wanted to have my own career and my own band and all that. So when 5 years ended, we were really hot and Porter didn't want me to go. And I said, "You said I could." And he said, "Well, you're not." And I said, "I am." And, you know, on and on like that. So we fought a lot over that. And so I thought, he's so stubborn, he's never going to listen to me. And this is going to be nothing but a heartache, and we're going to go through this every day. So I went home and I wrote the song that night just out of what I was feeling in my heart. Took it back to the next day and said, "Porter, sit down. There's something I need you to hear." So I started singing the song, and I was emotional. He got emotional, and we were both crying. When, by the time I finished the song, and he said, "Okay, that's the best thing you've ever wrote, and you can go if I can produce a record on that song." I said, "Okay, it's a deal." So that's how that came to be, and then I had a number one record on it, and then again, when I did The Best Little Chicken House in Texas, it was in that, so it became number one again. Vince and I had a top 10 duet on it. But it was only when Whitney Houston took it and took it all over the world with The Bodyguard that it really became what it is today. So I always think of that as our song, and it just killed me when they lifted her coffin up at the funeral. And when they started into that song, man, it was like you could have stabbed me in the heart with a dagger. And that's when I broke down over her. I mean, I really was, like everybody else, upset and hated it. But it was just then that I just started boo-hooing, and I thought, oh, that is just, those are my words, it's my song, it's her song. And I was thinking, I bet you that won't be the only coffin lifted up for that song to play. I figured when I'm dead, that'll probably be the same thing. And I thought, it was just overwhelming to me. But I will always be grateful and thankful to her for making that song all the things that it is.
Now, going back to songwriting, I think I read that you've written like over 5,000 songs, which in and of itself is pretty amazing. And I've heard you say that that's kind of your private time with God, and that it's sometimes a therapeutic process for you. What's it like for you now compared to when you were first starting out, and, you know, maybe that first song that you wrote about your doll or whatever, and what it's like for you now? What's changed, if anything?
Well, the process has not changed, because as a songwriter, you always long for that time and that space that I call that block of time where I can go on a write and binge, because I'm addicted to my songwriting. That's my favorite thing I do. I long for those days when I get so busy that I think, man, I hadn't got to really take off time to just write. Although I write something almost every day in a hurry. Everything's a rhyme to me. Everything's a song. But there is nothing more sacred and more precious to me than when I really can get in that zone where it's just God and me, and I really let those juices flow, and I still get the same feeling from it as I did when I was young, trying to do it for money, trying to hope I made money for it. I never did it for money, and I would still do it if I wasn't making money. But it's still, now I have more outlets for it. Sometimes it's not as fun when I write. I still love doing it, but if, for instance, like if I get commissioned to do something, if I'm writing a song for somebody else's movie, or if I'm writing, when I did 9 to 5, the musical, that was hard, only because I had so many people telling me what to do, because I would write a song that I thought was great, and they would have the script changed before it ever got around to all the people. Then they'd want me to change this and change that. But I was lucky that I was skilled as a writer, because I was quick. I could change it quick, and they were impressed with that. But it's just like sometimes you just don't want that many people in your business. So it's like, I'll be glad to be done with this, although I enjoyed it and glad that it turned out. But, you know, it's like too many chiefs, as they say, and sometimes it that gets a little much. But other than that, I still love it. When I get a chance to do it, I usually just block out. My dream is to, like, block out, like, 3 weeks to a month to say, don't bother me. I'm going wherever I go, and I'm just going to write songs, so leave me alone. And turn off the phones and go do that. So it's a sacred place for me.
All right, we're going to be back with much more with the one and only Dolly Parton. We'll be right back. You're listening to The Music Row Show.
Precious, fragile, little thing, little sparrow, little sparrow, flies so high and feels no pain.
Ah, welcome back to the Music Row Show, brought to you, as always, by Larravee Guitars. That is actually my favorite song on the CD. It's Little Sparrow. Just a beautiful, beautiful song. Okay, so back to the DVD. Again, Evening with Dolly, only available at Cracker Barrel. Go pick it up. One of the performances on there was a song that you wrote on your birthday while you were in New York, and it's called Only Dreaming. Really an amazing song, beautiful arrangement, and I'd like to actually focus on that for a minute, especially since you wrote it in New York, which is, you know, this big metropolitan city. What influenced the arrangement? Because it's very old world.
It is. Well, that song influenced that arrangement, because when I was, the story about that, I'm sure you must, I don't know if you heard the story, but it's when I was in New York, and we were doing rehearsals for the Broadway musical of 9 to 5. And all the big city lights and going up to the places and all the big music. And it was my birthday. I usually try to write something on my birthday every year. And so I was just riding in the limousine, and I was looking out at the skyline, and I was thinking, Lord, here I am, New York City, all the way from the Smoky Mountains. And so I was just singing in the back of the car while we got to the place. Oh, I know I'm only dreaming, just to take myself back home. And it kept getting gooder and gooder. And I thought, wow, this is like a kind of an unusual feeling, being in the big city writing something that mountainish. And so before I got out of the car, and I was going up the elevator, because I thought there was a piano or something up there, and I was just trying to get up to where, and I was writing it on the back of my script because I didn't have paper. I had my 9-to-5 script, and I was writing on the back of it to get the thing. So I went in, and this woman said, "Do you need?" I said, "I'm." She said, "Do you need anything?" I said, "No, I'm writing a song. I need to get somewhere I can." She said, "Do you need a piano?" I said, "No, you don't have a dulcimer, do you?" And so I just put it down. I got to where when I got back to the hotel, I put it down on a cassette. And I went in the studio with Kent Wells. We were recording at the time, probably Backwoods Barbie or after I got back from New York, I went in the studio and I said, "Kent, I wrote a song that I really think is good." And I said, "But I didn't put it down with any music. So I said, I'm just going to sing it a cappella." So I was standing in the studio and I just started singing the whole song, and I sang the whole song a cappella, and Kent said, "God, I love that." And so he just went out and started putting instruments on it. And so we didn't record it like a record. He just started adding what he felt was that old-timey sound, and that's what he tuned his guitar down into that old mountain sound, and then we started adding stuff to it. So it was all based on my original emotion coming off of that, singing it a cappella. And that's one of my favorites, too, by the way. Thank you. Yeah.
Now, we've talked on the show before about style and, you know, recording artists getting a look for themselves. I mean, what would you say to some of the recording artists today who, you know, pick a look and, you know, that they're going to have to be committed to for a long time? Because I noticed looking back through your history, your look has kind of changed a little bit here and there through the years. I mean, have you ever thought back and looked back at your pictures of yourself and thought, what in the world was I thinking then?
Well, you see that, but I certainly would not be able to judge anybody for anything. I look back at some of my pictures and I think, but I was serious as a pig peeing at that time. It's like, I thought, man, I was dead serious about that. I thought I looked good. You know, it's like that was how I felt, like, you know, that hair. And I look and I think, oh, my gosh. It's like I laugh myself. I can only imagine, even like I had to okay some pictures this morning that somebody wanted to use in a new TV show they're doing, and they wanted to go back to the old days of the country, and so they had collected these pictures. I have no idea where they got them, but my hair looked like a hornet's nest, and you know, it was just, and I had on eyelashes that were like that long, and they were just, I thought, oh my gosh, I look like Tammy Faye, which I always did anyway, but I was just thinking, oh my Lord, what was I thinking? But that was kind of how the country girls, you know, did it back then. But and my style, I have no style, and I don't like to be trapped in that. People have been kind to me. Now, I pay attention to my stage clothes. I like to shine. They're not necessarily, some of my clothes are, you know, I've paid tens of thousands of dollars for one piece, but I will spend money on show clothes. But I don't like to spend a lot of money on the clothes I wear, but I like them to shine. I like them to fit me. And as you've often heard, which is the real truth, that I patterned my look after the town tramp. When I was little, I thought she was beautiful. And they said, she's trash. And I thought, that's what I'm going to be, trash. Meaning, I thought that was a word for how you wanted to look. Because I wanted the big hair. I wanted, you know, because I was certainly not a natural beauty. I've got short fingers, so I wear long nails. I got short legs, so I wear high heels. I mean, I'm little, and my hair don't ever do what I want it to do, so I buy false hair. So anyway, so I just dress what makes me comfortable, which I think is what fashion really is. I would never try to follow the trend because I'd mess it up, no doubt. Even when they try to dress me for the big award shows and say, just wear this hairdo, wear this, these shoes, carry this purse. I'll put all that on and it don't feel right. And I'll mess it up by having the wrong hairdo with the right dress or the wrong purse or the wrong shoes. So I just think it's how you feel comfortable. I just think it's how you feel comfortable is what style is about, don't you? People place too much importance on that, I think.
I just want to say thank you again for spending time with us. And everybody go out and get the new DVD at Cracker Barrels called An Evening with Dolly. It's pretty awesome.
The CD is so good.
Yeah, it's really good. And, that just begs the question, you know, never one to rest on your laurels. What's next for you? What are you doing next? You going to be going out on tour?
Well, I'm not touring this year. I took off to write. I'm writing my life story as a musical and probably going to do my life story as a movie, too. That's two separate things. It'll probably have music in it, but I'm writing my life story as a musical, and I have a book that's going to come out this fall, a positive, uplifting little book that I'll be donating most of the proceeds to the Imagination Library, my literacy program, and it's and then I'm going to be writing some children's books, and so I'm just mainly focusing on my writing. Not just my songwriting, but some of the other stuff I want to do, too.
All right, well, stick around, y'all. We're going to be back with one more segment with the great Dolly Parton here on The Music Row Show.
Back through the years, I go wondering once again. Back to the seasons of my youth. And I recall a box of rags someone gave us, and how my mama put the rags to use. There were rags of many colors, but every piece was small, and I didn't have a coat, and it was way down in the fall. Mama sewed the rags together, so in every piece with love she made my coat of many colors that I was so proud of. While Mama sewed, she told a story from the Bible she had read about a coat of many colors Joseph wore. And then she said, I hope this coat will bring you good luck and happiness. And I just couldn't wait to wear it, and Mama blessed it with a kiss. My coat of many colors that my mama made for me, made only from rags, but I wore it so proudly. And although we had no money, I was rich as I could be. In my coat of many colors mama made for me. So with patches on my breeches, holes in both my shoes, in my coat of many colors, I hurried off to school, just to find the others laughing and making fun of me. In my coat of many colors Mama made for me. And oh, I couldn't understand.
All right, welcome back to the Music Row Show, brought to you by Larravee Guitars, and that, of course, is Coat of Many Colors, which was a big, big hit for Dolly Parton, one of her many hits.
That was, you know, it was just so special to be able to sit in that room and have that conversation with her.
Oh, absolutely.
And we've been doing this almost 5 years, and
yeah,
we've done a lot of cool things. This has been a really amazing experience, but every now and then, and that was probably the number one thing. I mean,
that was cool.
Just sitting there and going, oh my gosh, because, you know.
Well, the last time she was on, it was over the phone a few years ago,
right,
so we didn't actually get to be in the room with her. So this time it was like, woohoo.
Well, it's just, you know, there's hit songwriters, there's stars, there's recording artists, but she's, you know, there's only a few people in my mind that are in a whole different echelon when it comes to entertainers.
That's true.
And that was just pretty amazing.
It was pretty
amazing. I'm glad we got to do that.
I'm glad we got to do that, too, and got to share that with you folks.
I hope you enjoyed it, yeah.
Yeah, and you know what? We're not done yet. We've got a whole other great hour of the show coming up. We've got Pat Pattison is going to be joining us here in the next hour, and if you don't know about him, you should stick around and listen to him, because if you're a member of NSAI, you've heard his name a lot, because they are always talking about his books and the great advice that he gives about lyric writing and stuff.
That's right. And you know what? Let's give a quick shout out to our friends Gabe Hernandez and Brady Seals,
yes,
from Little Texas.
Absolutely.
They just opened up the Music City Pickers store in the Edgehill Plaza.
That's just right up the road here.
1200 Villa Place. They just ended up picking up so many pieces of instruments, or so many instruments, that they had to put a store up.
Well, you can find out all about them at musiccitypickers.com.
Or go say hi to them at their store.
There you go. Well, we're going to be back in just a few minutes with more of the Music Row Show. Stick around.